Okay, sir. We left off December 1969. You go back home with your wife, and did you go to Pope Air Force Base again?
Yes, I went back to Pope, and I was assigned to the 778th Airlift Squadron, and whose name was changed later to the 40th Tactical Airlift Squadron.
Okay.
So I stayed in the 40th, and in fact, I stayed there until I got, other than going back overseas, that's where I stayed until I retired.
Okay. And what did you do when you got back in 1969?
let's see, 69 when I got back. I was at Pope flying C-130s and doing the normal mission of running the Army around everywhere they wanted to go and practice dropping.
Okay.
Air dropping.
Were you doing any training for people who were going to Vietnam?
Yes. I trained. I didn't have any idea whether they were going to Vietnam or not, because we just trained them, and we could care less where they were going. A lot of them went to Vietnam, but we didn't train them just for Vietnam at
right.
that time. Prior to that, they had good training, and they knew they were going to Vietnam. But these were just training in how to fly the C-130s.
Okay. Okay. And how long were you doing this?
Well, I did that from when I got back in 69, I did that until 1975.
Okay.
But during that time, from 69 to 75, I occasionally went over TDY to Thailand,
mm-hmm.
and we'd fly occasionally over to Saigon and back. And our main mission was to do high-altitude airdrops over Cambodia.
Hmm.
We were supporting those people at that time.
Okay.
And we did that. Flew a real high airdrops because they were scared at that time that they had those shoulder-mounted missiles, and they didn't want us to get shot down with one of those.
Right. Do you remember the altitude?
No, I do remember it was very high. And when we would go to land somewhere at Phnom Penh, Cambodia, and we'd have to go down lower, we would have the loadmaster standing in the door with a flare gun. If a heat-seeking missile came at us, our defense was to shoot a flare gun out, and hopefully it would chase the flare.
Wow. That's a big chance to take.
Yeah. There's the one flare got shot, and he claimed that something was coming up, but I don't know if it was true or not.
Right. Okay, so you were based out of Thailand when you would fly these missions?
Yes, out of Utapao, Thailand, which is down on the Gulf Coast.
Okay. And what kind of things were you taking in and dropping?
We were dropping ammunition and supplies, high-altitude airdrops on parachutes. And what we would do is we'd have a coordinates that we'd have to go to. We'd go over there, and we'd have to contact them on the radio,
uh-huh.
and we'd have they'd have to give us a secret code because the enemy was also on the radio.
Right.
And if they gave us the proper secret code, we would drop the stuff to them.
Okay. Were these two South Vietnamese troops?
These I don't know. I tell you, I'm thinking back. I don't even know who we're dropping to. Somebody was fighting down there.
Okay.
And we were supporting them.
Okay. Well, the Americans were in there for a period of time, and the South Vietnamese were in there for a period of time, so
yeah.
I imagine you were probably supporting.
I mean, I got too many countries to worry about, and I don't know what's going on in Cambodia. I know Pol Pot was over there getting all those people.
Right. Okay. When you said secret code words, can you give an example of what you mean?
Well, you know, we would pick up before the mission, we'd pick up a book of that day's codes or something,
uh-huh.
and it was something like Alpha Bravo Charlie, and if we'd say okay, Alpha Charlie, and they'd have to give a response of Alpha Bravo Charlie, or ever what the proper response is to what we said to them,
okay.
according to a code book that they also had.
Okay.
If they didn't, they didn't get the equipment.
Okay.
And I know at least one time, we got permission to drop, and the people told us, hey, we've moved. We're across the river now. And it just sounded kind of funny, and so we went to a different code and asked them, and they couldn't respond to it, so we didn't drop to it. So I know that the enemy were trying to get that stuff.
Right.
The codes were important.
Okay, okay. Was that the only instance that you had?
Yeah, that's the only instance. That's the only problem we had at that one time. And
okay.
It was so high altitude, we weren't really involved in it. We had no idea what was down there at the bottom.
Right. Okay. Was it your standard crew again on the 130?
Yeah, just a standard crew.
Okay. How many missions do you think you flew during this time period?
Jesus. Maybe every other day for
really?
A couple months.
Okay. See, would you go for the 6 month stay again?
No, it was usually a 2 month stay.
Okay.
Then, at the most, sometimes you know I don't remember exactly, but I would go over at different times. And that was TDY from Pope, you know, just maybe a squadron.
Right.
And we'd go over there.
Now, how did you get selected? Was it simply your squadron was
our
selected?
Our squadron went.
Okay. Okay. Any outstanding memories from this time? Any incidents that pop
no.
in your mind about?
No. No, not for the for when I was TDY from there at Pope.
Okay. Let me ask you a couple questions about the early 1970s. The United States left Vietnam officially in the early part of 1973. How did you feel about the plan that the United States had to Vietnamize the war, to turn over the war to the Vietnamese? Did you think that was a good idea or feasible or what?
No, even at that time. I'm giving you my thoughts then.
Sure.
It was to me, it was, okay, we've lost, get out of there. Mm-hmm. There was no way possible that the Vietnamese could take that over.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think so?
They didn't have anything without the American troops.
Okay.
There was no way. In my opinion, there was no way. It was just saying, okay, we lost.
Okay.
But if we're not in there, we won't be the ones that get overrun.
Right. Do you feel differently today?
No, that's exactly the way I feel about it.
Okay.
We gave it up at that time.
Okay. Do you think the United States achieved the quote-unquote peace with honor that Nixon and Kissinger said?
No.
Why not?
If you back all the way up to should we have been there, of course we shouldn't have been there. And then even halfway through the war, let's say in the 60s, there was a, if you had any intelligence at all, you knew that no matter who you supported, whether it was a good president or them, there was no way that we were going to win because we didn't have the people behind us.
Mm-hmm.
The people really didn't want another country taken over like America did.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a united country, and Ho Chi Minh had offered that to them way back, and they had secretly, I think, wanted that.
Right.
So there's no way, no matter what, that we could have won, in my opinion.
Go ahead.
Some people said, that's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you felt when the United States had completely withdrawn from Southeast Asia? Or from Vietnam, I should say.
I just knew that was the end of it, and I was just wondering how long it was going to take before the Viet Cong took over.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was 73, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
And so it took 2 years. That was a pretty long time, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it'd be months.
Hmm.
And as a matter of fact, we'll get into it, but I was there on the last day.
Really?
In 75 when they evacuated Saigon.
Let's talk about that. You said you did go into Saigon a number of times. You would land in there.
Yeah.
What had changed that you noticed?
The openness of the military walking around downtown wasn't there, and if you even went downtown, it was in an armored vehicle that the Viet Cong were driving by on these motorcycles and throwing grenades and. To cars and stuff, and it was guarded against that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just more tight and secure.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody trusted anybody.
That
was my opinion of it, yeah.
You felt more nervous?
Yeah, and it felt more strange than friendly.
Right. Were there less Americans on the street that you noticed?
There were not lots of Americans. They were up until then.
Okay.
They weren't. And, you know, there's many, many more Americans that were in Vietnam then, but they just weren't running around downtown Saigon.
Right, right. Now, when you flew in during this time from 1970 to 73, when the Americans were still there, I guess into 75, would you stay, how long would you stay? Would you stay out of Tonsonut? Would you go into the city and stay?
I would, when I'd go into Saigon, I'd stay there at Saigon in some barracks.
Okay.
Overnight. I'd never stay more than overnight when I go back into Saigon.
Okay. And were you just simply dropping off cargo?
Yes.
Refueling and then coming back out?
Yes, yes.
Okay. How long would it take you to fly from Thailand into Saigon?
Oh, we'd have to fly across Cambodia. I would say, I don't know, but I guess a couple hours.
Okay. And were you shot at much?
No, never, never. We'd come over high altitude and then lower ourselves into Saigon.
Okay.
So we weren't shot at all there.
Okay. Why don't you tell me about being there in April 1975?
Well, let's catch up to where I got. That
sure.
was why I was at Pope, and then in January of 1975, I was given PCS orders to go to Kadena, Okinawa to fly C-130s.
Okay.
So the last part of January, I was in Kadena of 75, and from Kadena, they sent us over to Thailand. And we were helping to move all the equipment and people out of Saigon. And we would just go daily, 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 in and out, in and out, in and out. And the last night when the Viet Cong came and took over, we also had to carry Army people or a couple guards in the back of our plane with guns to keep people from running onto the airplane.
Really?
I was just wondering if they were going to shoot and kill somebody because they're trying to get on an airplane. You never know. And we'd carry out sometimes 100 people sitting on the floor of our airplane without any seats or anything, just sitting on pallets on the floor, you know. And we'd bring in nothing other than the Stars and Stripes, just use the empty aircraft to take out everything that was in the PX and everything that was in the radio stations and all that other stuff, you know.
Right.
And the people. Oh, so we do it over and over and over, and so the last day that the Saigon was being overrun, which was in, what was that when they got overrun?
April, end of April 1975.
1975, April the 30th when it fell.
Yes, sir.
I was, our route then was to go, to come in straight off of the south of Vietnam, high altitude. We were so many airplanes that we didn't even have to see where we're going, just look and follow the one ahead of you type thing, you know?
Right.
Really high, get straight, stay high until you got over the field and circle down over the field and land at Tansanet de Saigon just to keep those people from shooting you. And get a load and take off. That's what we do all the time. And they even got one C-130. We had they had to push it off the side of the plane, off of the side of the runway, so we could still land. And we would do it and do it and do it until I was coming in, and we were circling to land when we got the word from I don't know where. I doubt it was on down Saigon to everybody off. This is the last one has landed. No more. And we went on back to Thailand. Without landing, because that the last one had landed right ahead of us.
Okay.
And in fact, I think I got a commendation medal for doing all of that stuff too.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you lose any 130s while you were doing this?
There was one of them there on the runway that had been shot, or something happened. I think he got shot, and they had to push it off to the side, and you could see it every time he landed. They didn't have time to do. Didn't hurt the crew. I think the crew went on the next airplane, took off.
Could you go ahead?
Yes, that was an interesting thing happened. You know, that night is the one they waved us off. The next morning, I went out to the Utapau airfield there, and it was completely full. Airplanes on the grass everywhere. They'd all departed from Vietnam, you know, with anybody that knew how to fly. and anybody that was their family or anything in it. And they had every kind of airplane there was. Helicopters, even C-123s, I think, landed there.
Wow.
From people getting out of Vietnam.
Right.
And an interesting part about it is I stood there and watched them. One of these great big crane-looking helicopters that the Army uses.
Yes, sir.
They came over and started picking up these helicopters and taking them out into the Gulf of Siam. I figured they were taking them out to a carrier somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And before they got out of sight, they would drop them into the ocean, come back and get another one, drop it. And they'd come and get the airplanes and take them out there and drop them, and they were just dumping those into the ocean.
Wow.
And the reason was the Viet Cong said, hey, that Air Force belongs to us now, give them back.
Right.
And we said, oh, okay, give us a couple of days. But they didn't get anything back.
Right.
They were dumped in the ocean.
How did that make you feel watching all this?
Nothing. I thought it was right cute.
Okay. Could you actually see any of the North Vietnamese Army advancing on Saigon when those times you were flying in and out of that area?
I would see a lot of ground fire at night. You'd see a lot of tracers and a lot of ground fire around Saigon, so you knew they were very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
After they actually got in, I'm sure I knew nothing about it because we weren't allowed in then.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how those around you felt during this time period?
Those around me, meaning whom?
Just your crew and any of the other Americans.
They thought we had to get all those people out. We had to get them out, and we were worried about being rushed by a bunch of people after we landed. You know,
mm-hmm.
So much so that we wouldn't be able to take off.
Right.
That was a big worry for us, because I had a couple of times I think that had happened,
mm-hmm.
at not at Saigon but at some of the other bases.
What was your payload? Do you remember?
No. No, I just know every what we were allowed to carry, we filled it up,
right.
Either with equipment that was being evacuated or Vietnamese who were being evacuated.
Of course, that wasn't your job as a navigator. That was the load.
No, stuff. That wasn't mine at all. It was to get there and get out.
Right. Okay. Any other things that stand out in your mind about this time period?
No.
Okay. How did you feel about the fall of South Vietnam? I mean, I know you said it was almost inevitable.
Yeah, I thought it was a shame, and I wondered if that was going to be the end of Americans even being able to visit that place, because it would just be shut off and be communist. But
right,
even way later, I visited Saigon when I was TDY to Thailand. They were going from Thailand to the Cambodia,
mm-hmm.
for the embassy run on Cambodia, then to Saigon, and then to Hanoi,
mm-hmm.
and then reverse it. And they let me out in Saigon, and I stayed there until they came back from Hanoi,
mm-hmm.
and went back over to Thailand. So after the war, I wanted to see, and the people were still friendly then, but there wasn't any Americans.
Right. How long were you stationed at Kadena?
Kadena, I was there for, I was at Kadena for only a couple months, and then they moved us up to Yokota, Japan. The whole, since the war was over, the whole squadron moved up to Japan.
Okay.
Yokota.
And how long did you stay there?
3 years.
Okay. Did your wife come with you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She loved Japan again.
Right, of course.
Mm.
Okay, this takes us to 1978.
Really? You're right. I left June 1978 and came back to the 40th Squadron at Pope.
And how long were you there at Pope again?
Until April of 81, and I quit the Air Force.
Okay. Why did you decide in 1981 to get out?
Well, I had never had any. Every year I thought I was going to get out and just never did, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay, I'm getting close to retirement. When I get 20 years, I'm going to get out.
Right.
And so when I got 20 years, I was going to get out. And they told me that if I stay one more year and a half,
mm-hmm.
I could get credit for 22 years and my retired pay would be a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. A year and a half after my 20 years, I just quit.
Right. What rank were you?
I was a major.
Okay. Okay. And when you went back to Pope that last time, what were you doing? Were you still flying 130s?
Right. And when I came back to Pope that last time, they made me the chief navigator for the squadron.
Mm-hmm.
And I I ran all the navigators in the squadron.
Okay. Let me ask you some questions, some general questions about the Vietnam War.
Okay.
First of all, when you would go and come back so often, so many times, did you ever have any problems transitioning back to the United States?
In what way?
Well, just going from a war zone back to a peaceful zone, back to a war zone, back to the United States.
No, it wasn't any problem at all.
Okay. How about when you got out of the Air Force in general? Was it a difficult transition for you to civilian life?
The big loss was my friends, mm-hmm. not the military life, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
You're just dumping a bunch of friends. Just, you know, it's like leaving college or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, staying around Pope, since I'm still there,
mm-hmm.
I've still got a lot of those friends around.
That's good. That's good. Did you discuss your Vietnam experience with anyone else when you came back to the United States, besides your buddies and, I guess, your parents?
No.
Did anyone ask you about it?
Civilians? No, and no one ever welcomed me back or said dip.
Hmm.
It was nothing.
Why do you think that is?
I don't think I don't think it was a very popular war. If it had been the Second World War, we'd have been heroes.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the anti-war movement inside the United States?
Well, it didn't bother me. There's always people who are going to be on one side or the other,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't affect me at all. Since it didn't affect me, it didn't bother me. And I really didn't have any problem with it at all, except I thought it was an awful big shame when those people at Kent State got shot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it was. There's no reason to shoot them.
Right. Where were you when that happened?
I don't even know when Kent State was, but I was probably overseas. I was probably over there.
Okay. What did you think of U.S. policy then, after the war, 1975? You're back,
mm-hmm.
out of that situation.
Yeah.
What did you think about overall U.S. policy?
It was a big mistake. Overall, even from the first, it should not have gone that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go way on back, Nguyen Diem shouldn't have even been the president. They cut off the elections they should have had in 56, when Ho Chi Minh would have certainly won. So the whole thing was something that we rigged. And you can even go back further and say, well, the French shouldn't be there,
mm-hmm.
and then the Japanese shouldn't have been there. And then after the Japanese, the English came in and let the French back in, and you can go forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, in fact, you can go on back to how come we're in America.
Mm-hmm.
There's no good, if you go down to the truth, there's no good stories about any of those countries taking over any other country.
Mm-hmm.
Just shouldn't happen. But you know, the way on back, the Chinese took over Vietnam. Before that, the Vietnamese took over the Champa.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back as far as you want to. There's always somebody who's going to take over your country if they can.
Yes, sir.
And the same thing happened in Laos,
mm-hmm.
in Cambodia. It's just one of those things. I don't think we should have been there. I think every country, the people of every country, are proud of their country. And if some foreigner comes in for any reason, I don't care if they're real rich or what, for any reason, you'll welcome what they give you, but you won't welcome them staying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
Okay. Do you think the United States government learned any lessons from the Vietnam War?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to implement them, but I think that they learned if they're going to fight a war that they're going to try to win, they should start out by putting everything in it to start with rather than dribbling stuff through.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as fighting that war, they shouldn't have even been there to start with.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you feel in retrospect, or did you have that feeling when you were there?
I had a little of that feeling when I was there. I never, when I was there, thought that we could win the war. And I remember between one of those tours way back in the 60s, my aunt asked me, what's going to happen over there? And I said, we're going to lose, and we're going to get out. And a couple years later, we did, of course. But I never thought we had a chance over there, because I think I knew the people, and the people weren't for it.
Right.
You got to have that. You can't buy every single person.
what could the United States have done differently besides not going?
besides not going. Well, I think they should put the major emphasis on pacifying the people, getting the people proud of ever who's in government over there, mm-hmm. and figuring that the people who are in charge are going to protect them. You know, even when we went to strategic hamlets and started taking them out of their old hamlets and putting them into new cities, they didn't like that. And the whole programs we did, I think it was political anyway, didn't work. And then when they, oh, Lord, when they did all that stuff with the Buddhists, you know, they dumped on the cow dye, they dumped on the Huahao and the other religious sects, you can't do that. Not and succeed.
Do you think it was even possible for the United States at that time to have backed or let free elections happen, knowing that Ho Chi Minh would have won the elections?
No, not during that time. They couldn't have, because we were so scared of that domino effect, you know.
Right.
And we were so scared because the communists were making such advances. You know, they did. Mao had just taken over China, and Russia, and everybody was trying to increase communism. And we were so scared of it that we were trying to block it wherever we could. And so there was no way we could not be there with that kind of a policy.
Right.
And if I had believed that way back then, I'd have probably done the same thing that Kennedy and all of them did and put the troops in there. But I think they should have paid more attention to pleasing the people.
Why do you think the United States didn't pay attention to that?
I don't know if it's because they listened to No Din Nu and No Din Ziem, or because they were listening to military leaders who were inept, unnamed, or what, but I have no big reason why they didn't. Well, they never have. I don't know why they'd start now.
What about the political leadership in the United States during the war? What's your opinion of that?
Well, as far as the presidents, I'm not sure that it was their decisions. I think it was them listening to their military, the bosses of the military who were in the Defense Department, including McNamara,
right.
who made the decisions, and they just said, oh, okay, I'll go along with that, or okay, I won't go along with that. I don't think they came up with ideas themselves. Any president.
Okay.
I don't know. I might be wrong.
Right. Personally, looking at your Vietnam experience, looking back today, how do you feel about your service in Vietnam?
I never thought that there I was serving my country. I thought there I was having fun and being excited. And those people who now say, well, here, I serve my country, I say, bull, you went over there because you got drafted. Don't give me that shit. Excuse me. And it was just something that... being a bachelor, I had no other thing to do. It was either that or go try to learn to bow or something.
Go back to Elon for that last
one. Yeah. or maybe give me a doctorate degree at Texas Tech. Who knows?
That's right. What do you think was the most significant thing you learned while doing your many times in Vietnam?
Probably a good question. I think I learned to listen to other people, hear their story and understand their story, and get along with them, no matter whether they were completely different from my opinions or not. And before that, it's just me and nobody else. Whatever I say or whatever I do is the only thing that's important.
Uh-huh.
I learned to listen to the other people, which is a good thing.
Is that something that you think that you were born with but never had the chance to practice, or was that something that being overseas taught you?
I think being overseas taught me that. I was just too young before that. When you're young, you don't know anything but yourself and what's going to happen the next day. What's going to happen in the future means nothing to you. And who's running the country or doing this or that, you could care less. all you want to know is if you got gas for your car the next day. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up a lot. And because, you know, it was just age. It wasn't because I was over there as much.
Right. How do you think the wars most affected your life?
Well, I don't know. I feel like I have matured so much from being over there. I know so much about it, and I've met so many people who are my friends now that I really value that whole experience.
Is there anything that you would change about your experience, if you could?
No, of course, you know, there's a lot of people I'd like to bring back who died, but
right.
I can't think of anything.
Do you suffer any disabilities from your service?
No, you know, I've got people everywhere who say they've got this and that from me spraying Agent Orange, but mm-hmm. But I have no disabilities.
Any post-traumatic stress disorder?
Nope, nothing.
So you've had no reaction, nothing at all from your Agent Orange exposure?
Nothing. And I have two intelligent kids who've got no birth defects.
Okay. Well, what do you think about those who are claiming this, that there's absolutely a connection, especially... Well, go ahead.
If right now I had cancer...
Yes, sir.
I'd blame it on Agent Orange. You know, well, you've got to blame it on something and what's around there.
Mm-hmm.
So those people who come up with any disease, it's just like, I'm not sure the Gulf War people had all of those problems, but if you come up with a disease, you got to look around for some source of it. And Agent Orange was such an easy way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't believe that any of those diseases was caused by Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're still making those physical tests every 5 years nowadays.
Right.
That I go out to California
mm-hmm.
for, and I just went out last year for the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And all they found so far is that we live longer than normal people.
Huh. Are they surprised that there's nothing wrong with you guys in general?
No. They never outlawed that defoliant. They mm-hmm. still use it
mm-hmm.
in farms. My uncle's still using it now. And I said, oh, that's 2,4-D. He said, yeah, how do you know that? I said, that's what I sprayed. But they still use it, so there's nothing wrong with it. And so it was such a little bit that was dioxin that to have some special forces guys say they walked through a jungle once that had that in it, which was 1/1000th of an ounce per acre,
mm-hmm.
It kind of makes you wonder, are you serious? When we get it all over us, I'd have to wash it all. And then I'd say, hey, I was soaked in it every day. And they'd say, well, the difference is you could go home to a shower every day. We couldn't. I said, okay. Who knows? It may be true that they suffered from that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I come down with a disease, I'll probably blame it on Agent Orange. What else is there?
Well, there's old age. And
yeah. I'm going to get some. When I get Alzheimer's, I'm going to say, yeah, Agent Orange did it. But, no, I don't think they've shown it to be a cause of any of those illnesses. But I'm not going to tell any Army person. I've got some friends now who are getting disability because they've got diabetes, and they said it came from Agent Orange. And I look at them, and they're great big fat people. And you think, well, mm-hmm, okay.
That, in fact, the diabetes is the only thing I think that's been proven
yeah.
somehow to be linked to it, a higher incident of diabetes, I should say.
Yeah. I'm surprised you know that.
Well, I have to do my research. What about the Vietnamese today? I know there are orphanages in Vietnam that you know claim that, and they have a lot of kids who are deformed, birth defects, things like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
They're claiming that it's all from Agent Orange.
Yeah.
And I assume you would say, no way.
Yeah, I'm thinking no way. I'm thinking if it happened to them, it should have happened to some of us who were in it every day.
Right.
For a couple years, you know. Why aren't we sick?
Mm-hmm.
But it could be that some bodies are allergic to it and some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But if it were really something dangerous, I think it's time to outlaw it so that farmers today don't use it.
Right.
but personally, I don't think there's any problem with it. You know, my co-pilot, who Jack Spade, I think y'all even interviewed him or an interview.
Yes, sir.
He even drank it.
Why did he drink it?
Just to show people that it wasn't dangerous.
Was this while he was there, or?
No, I was. Even now, he'll say, "Hey, come on down. I'll stick my finger in it and lick it."
Do you think the government has taken care of its Vietnam veterans?
I think they're taking care of their veterans as their whole veterans as much as they're required to. I don't think there's any special love for whether it's Vietnam or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And as the budget gets tighter and tighter, I'm sure that taken care of will get smaller and smaller too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm proud to now that I'm almost 70, I've never in my life had to buy a prescription.
Wow.
They're all free.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
Yes, sir.
The way those things cost nowadays.
Have you ever wanted to go back to Vietnam?
I love that place. I'd love to go back anytime and visit them and talk to them just to see how they're taking it now. I'd love for the place to be non-communist but on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, they can make a good a democracy out of that thing and be something like South Korea if they tried.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it could ever be like Japan. But I'd like to go back. I'm sure I never will.
Why do you say that?
Because if I get a chance to go anywhere, it's going to be Japan.
Right, right. How many times have you guys been able to go back to Japan? You and
Once after that did I ever go back.
Okay.
On a visit.
What do you think about Vietnam today? Do you think that you said there is economic potential, and you do think that that the government will change?
I think communism can't last. In my opinion, communism is a monarchy, but they just don't call the guy a king. And the reason he stays in power is because he's got the military.
Mm-hmm.
And that the people get so bad off that they don't care whether they live or die, they're going to get rid of that. The way they're living,
mm-hmm.
It'll be like Russia. It'll fall apart. But I think it's going to be a long time from now.
Mm-hmm.
Probably happen first in China.
Yeah, so what do you think the influence of China is over that course of events?
Well, you know, China did supply them until we came in, and probably after that, along with Russia, the North Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as China taking over Vietnam, they had the chance to do that before and turned it down, saying, no way, those people won't follow us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think they have any desire to take over South Vietnam now. I just think that communism in those countries will eventually go away.
Okay.
I'm not sure capitalism and democracy are the best way. It just happens to be the best one we've come up with so far,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Have you had any contact with Vietnamese here in the United States?
Well, not lately, but they used to have a couple of Vietnamese restaurants down here, and I'd go in,
mm-hmm.
to see how my Vietnamese language was coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a lot of them living around here, but I can see them now and then, but no contact that is important.
Mm-hmm. Do you think much about Vietnam these days?
No. No, I don't. Until you called, I would have forgotten about it.
Hmm. Was that on purpose, or is that just because that was just part of your
No,
project,
no,
or?
It was just I'm moving on.
Okay.
Right now there's too many other things to think about. We've got, how about Iraq? I can think about that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. What movies on Vietnam have you seen, or do you try to avoid them, or Is it?
You say movies?
Yes, sir.
I think I've seen all of them. Name one, and I'll tell you what I thought about it.
Well, the first one that really made a big splash was The Green Berets with John Wayne.
Oh, yeah. I don't know quite what to say about that one. But you know that song that Barry Sadler came out with, Green Berets?
Mm-hmm.
That was, while I was over there, that was really a popular song.
Really?
And we heard it all the time.
Uh-huh.
And the John Wayne movie was okay. It was just entertaining. The movie that really got me was the one where I don't remember other than there was the guy in the back streets who was doing the Russian roulette with the pistol.
Oh, the Deer Hunter.
Deer Hunter, yeah. That one kind of got to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it really showed the dark side of that place.
Did that dark side exist?
I don't think it was that dark, but I'm sure there was a dark side.
Okay. You mentioned that song. What other songs take you back to Vietnam or that time period in your life?
That's the only one that would come to mind.
Okay. How about books on Vietnam? You seem to be very well read on Asian history and whatnot.
Well, yeah, I've read all of them that were important, that were interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple while I was over there that I read that I thought, The Quiet American with Graham Greene.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was over there, I read a book that wasn't about Vietnam, but it was about Asia, called The Ugly American.
Yes.
And I thought it was so true, the way we treat other countries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuck with me.
Okay.
And then there's a couple of interesting books on Vietnam. I don't know their names of them now that I've read.
Do you try to read on Vietnam in particular? Or
Here recently and not. To get back to that original, I thought the first big book that I read was Bernard Falls' Street Without Joy. I thought that was really good.
Yes, sir.
And just the history ones after that would really tell me what was going on in Washington,
mm-hmm,
during all that time, which we had no idea of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those were always interesting books. Or some generals tell of it, or some Vietnamese guys tell of it, especially the Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
Nguyen Cao Ky came out with a book I thought was good.
Mm-hmm.
It told the truth about all of that stuff. You remember Nguyen Cao Ky?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay.
I know what you're talking about. I was just trying not to interrupt you.
Oh, okay. That's it.
Okay. What would you tell young people today about the Vietnam War if you had the chance to talk to them about it?
Other than it was a war that we lost that we shouldn't have been in, not much to say. They want to learn about it. I could tell them about it history-wise, what happened,
mm-hmm,
when this president got shot and when that one happened. But other than that, other than the history, you know, they can read it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably wouldn't be interested anyway. You know, when I went over there, I had never even heard of a war or a battle called Dinh Binh Phu, you know?
Right.
And some of those battles are so big and so important to me go all the way through school without ever having heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something, yeah.
Do you think that's true today, that continues?
I think it's even more true today. I think that they go on with the highlights of things. So for one year you'll say, okay, what happened this year? Oh, Kennedy got shot. Okay, what happened the next year? But they won't go into, okay, not only did Kennedy get shot, ZM got killed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just go with the timeline type stuff. That's about all a student can remember anyway.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the attention span intellectually is so poor in the United States then?
I don't know. I think it's just running so fast. I think they don't have time. There's so much more that have gone on. Unless you really say, okay, I'm gonna concentrate on the rise and fall of the Roman Empire or something, you know,
mm-hmm,
you really have no idea. Things go too quick for you to learn it all.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to get an overview of it. If there's something that you really like, you can study it by itself, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Have you been to the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, I have. And I really love that. I want to go back up there. You go up and look at the wall and see those people that you knew, mm-hmm. and all of the other people leaving stuff at the bottom of it, you know.
Yes, sir.
It was a really silent, appreciative time. Yeah, I'd like to do that again. Of course, you know, I got that one guy's name going to go up there in May. I'd like to go up there and see his name.
Mm-hmm. Could you actually watch them carve it into the wall?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think they told me when in May they're going to put it up.
Mm-hmm.
They do it every... If they got anybody to add, they say they add them every May.
Okay. Well, Mr. Hodgson, is there anything else that you'd like to add to our conversation today?
No. That should be about it.
Okay. Well, I've enjoyed talking with you, and we'll end the interview now with Mr. John Hodgson. Thank you, sir.
You're quite welcome.